Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I am Summer Brooks, and it is that time of year, that wonderful time of year where we get to explore the collisions, the crashes of horror and Christmas all mashed up together. And of course, that means it's Death Scribe time, which will be happening Monday, December 3rd at Lincoln Hall in Chicago. And I'm told by our friends at Wild Claw Theater that the performance is actually almost sold out. So if you were intending to get tickets, I would suggest you do so very, very, very soon. But as always, my quest to share this phenomenal gift that we get every year from the Wild Claw Theater Company progresses with the finalists for the competition this year. This year's Death Scribe, the 11th year it is, we have the five finalists. They're on the website, wildclawtheater.com. Go check it out. Death Scribe is up there front and center. But today we are talking with each team, the five finalists who have made the cut. As always, the submissions go on, I think they start in July, and they're whittled down to five. And then directors are chosen, and the directors do a blind read and pick the play that they want to direct. So first up, we have Floris, which is written by Ben Huffman and William Andrew Lewis, and directed by Jose Naturas. Next up, we have The Forbidden Room, which is written by Nikita Duke and directed by Jarika Guest. After that, we have Migraine, written by Skylar Shrimp, directed by Spencer Davis. After that, we have Subject Number 9 by returning Death Scribe finalist Tim Griffin and directed by Elizabeth Lovelady. And finally, we have Whisper Trigger, written by Dan Finnan and Sarah Guise, who are also returning Death Scribe finalists and directed by Tara Branham. I've read the scripts for these five finalists. I cannot wait to hear the finished products of them once the Death Scribe performance is over and the recordings are added to the archives, which you can find on the Wild Claw website for previous years. I highly recommend 2015 for my favorite shudder-inducing, will never, ever, ever stop grossing me out earwigs. And I have my favorites. I have my favorites among these five, but I will reserve my opinion until after the performance. If anyone is in Chicago and wants to give me a, like, call in a post-performance report, please feel free. Call in 602-635-6976. Let us know what you experienced, how you liked it. And with that, we're going to get right into the interviews. Hey, welcome back to more Death Scribe coverage here on Slice of Sci-Fi. Right now we're talking about the finalist piece titled Floris, which was written by Ben Huffman and Andrew Lewis and will be directed by Jose Naturas. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing great. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Fine. Thanks.
Now, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but Floris is about an incident at an elder care facility. And I'm really curious how Ben and Andrew came up with this idea. Guys, one of you?
Oh, no, Ben, please.
Okay, yeah. So it's interesting. So it's based on a true story. It's based on something that actually occurred to a mutual friend of mine and Andy's. And one night we were both from rural Kentucky. We were sitting on a porch in the dark, and her husband prompted her to say, "Hey, you know, you should tell them about the florist lady that you encountered at work." And she didn't really want to talk about it, but after she did, me and Andy sort of looked at each other and was like, "Oh my God, what did we just hear?" And you know, from there we started writing about it. It's something that's fascinated us for a long time.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was pretty amazing to hear her tell it, and you know, I hope we can do justice to it. But you know, hearing her tell it just left us like with chills. Just she was like in the middle of her, right, reliving the moment, and thinking back on her being in that moment and kind of reliving it in front of us, I think helped develop some of the sounds that we hope you'll hear in the play.
Yeah, the atmosphere set up reminded me sort of like some of the teaser videos for Serenity when River Tam is being questioned by the doctor, and then that last video she kind of snaps, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is not going well. But it just there's sort of like a haunted aspect to the entire piece. And Jose, I'm kind of wondering, was that what encouraged you to choose this piece, or was there something else in there that just sort of sparked your excitement?
I mean, honestly, the truth is that I really loved the way that the story was structured. I thought that the writing of it was just so well done, really creative and fascinatingly structured, especially in terms of radio drama, the way that they describe the sounds and utilize this sort of storytelling folded within the narrative really kind of got me excited about creating this experience. You know, a lot of the other scripts are a little bit more straightforward in terms of all of this is happening and the audience is hearing it as it does. Whereas with Florist as a script, we really do sort of get this sense of, you know, almost time traveling, right? There's these interviews going on, and then we're going back to the incident in question and experiencing that too. So I thought that was really interesting. And obviously, in terms of horror as a genre, the piece just really is chilling in a lot of different ways. So it made me super excited as a piece to sort of take on as a really cool directorial challenge, and especially for live radio drama.
Yeah, having a piece with two different narrative threads as a radio drama really, really surprised me. And what are you looking forward to, Jose, about directing that sort of disjointed narrative?
Well, I think it's great because it sort of puts the audience in a similar position as some of the characters themselves. I mean, you have this interviewer person, right, who in and of himself is sort of not sure of what's happening, not sure of what's going on, and has to listen to these other people tell this story. So in the same way that the interviewer is encountering this narrative for the first time, so is the audience. So I'm really excited about being able to, you know, enfold the audience in the actual experience of encountering the story. In a similar way to, I think, you know, just hearing Ben and Andy talk about the roots of the story, how they were listening to their friend tell that story the first time around, and allowing us to fuse that experience for both the audience and the character of the interviewer, and allow us to kind of go back in time to the event in question. I think that's really exciting, and achieving that with our sound designer and the band leader has been a really fun challenge too.
Cool. So all of you, is this your first experience with Death Scribe, or have you jumped in this pool before?
Very
well,
first.
Personally,
Ben, I'm sorry. Oh, so my friend Ben located the challenge. He lives in Chicago, and we've written together, as you know, and imagined horror scenarios and stuff together since high school. We've been best friends since then, and this is our first time though writing for a non-visual media, and it really was a challenge. And to hear Jose talk about that, we might have pulled it off. That's really thrilling to me.
Yeah, Jose, that's awesome to hear, and it's so interesting and amazing to hear someone else get exactly what we put on the page. We've never really heard that before, except from, you know, friends and stuff. So it's so nice to have this work in someone like Jose's hands who, you know, we can't wait to see him transform that. But yeah, it's our first time around with DeathScribe, and we're super excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I've personally worked with DeathScribe as an actor before. I'm, you know, based here in Chicago, and on Valentine's Day, they did a performance that was a live DeathScribe performance, specifically right. All related to, like, love and the horrors of love as a thing. So I get to participate as an actor last year. But as a writer, I kind of specify in the horror genre in a lot of ways. So Wild Claws, the theater company, has been on my radar and has been, you know, it's populated by people that I know and respect and have worked with in different facets before. So this time around, they reached out to me to potentially direct, and it's my first time directing for DeathScribe, and it's been a blast so far.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing the final product when they post it on their website later after the competition. The competition will be Monday, December 3rd at the Lincoln Theater in Chicago. I keep getting mixed up. It's like, are they at the Den or are they at the Lincoln? Where are they this year? But this year it's at the Lincoln,
yeah.
And I wish you guys good luck in your quest for the Bloody Axe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we shall be back with more DeathScribe coverage right after this. Hi, welcome back to more DeathScribe coverage here at Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me now are the team presenting Forbidden Room, written by Nikita Duke and directed by Jairika Guest. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Now, Nikita, you wrote this. What? I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but there's a culture and a dark magic involved here that I don't think a lot of DeathScribe participants have been exposed to. I'm curious where the story came from.
Okay, well, I'm thinking of a lot of childhood memories I had, and one of them was that when we were younger, we had this room in the house that we were not allowed to go into. And I think essentially that was just because there were a lot of things. It was like a storage room, and we didn't want us going in and breaking things. So you had to go in only when you were with an adult. And I think I was talking about that with my sister, so we were just thinking of different things and how the adults saw the room as compared to how we perceived the room. And I just wanted to make a horror story out of that experience.
Well, it's a very effective and compelling read. I can't wait to hear it performed. Now, Jairika, you selected this. You know, as your prerogative as the director, you got to see the different finalists and pick the one you wanted. What about this story appealed to you?
You know, it's actually an interesting story. This was something that was blessed upon me, but I'm glad that it was, because one, Nikita and I have worked together before. We did a piece with Chicago dramatists, and her writing is simply phenomenal, very poignant. And, like, first and foremost is, like, her representation and being that she is, like, writing and as a student, like, right now, as a student, like, doing this, and it's really good work, and people, more and more people should be aware of that. It's an honor to be able to direct this piece and to, like, be able to put her work on another platform. This piece itself is just really cool. Like, it's one that, as I was reading it when I first received it, like, and this is no lie, this is not me saying it for sake of, like, because she's right here and listening. It's a very scary play. It is something that I follow the characters in. Just thinking about how I would play with my siblings and then be in a situation where I'm like, oh, wait, trouble, you know? It's just really fascinating just how well it's captured in her writing and just the overall storytelling of it. Again, not to give it away, but yeah, it's a really, it's quite suspenseful in a beautiful way. So it's something that I'm really excited that people will be able to experience as well.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of ambiguity at the end that I think is delicious and delicious, yes. And vicious. It's vicious. It's like, oh,
right. That's what we like.
Excellent. Now, have either of you had experience with Death Scribe before, or just horror on stage before?
Competition. I went to the website to check on a bunch of things to find out what other plays sounded like for the previous years, and that's like the most experience I had at the time, because I listened to like a lot of the previous radio plays. I really enjoyed the Tower Toe Shuffle. I love that so much, and I was just trying to see what people were going for and just how it was done. So before that, I didn't have any experience with them.
Yeah, I personally, this is my first experience with Death Scribe. I had a friend that directed last year, but as far as like working with them, this is the first time, and it's really cool. They take care of us.
Cool. I for one am looking forward to how some of the sound effects come across, mm-hmm. just from reading how they were written. I'm like, okay, what are they going to do there? And so I'm really looking forward to hearing that. What, Jerika, what are you looking forward to in actually directing? Has any special sort of approach come through in rehearsals yet?
Ah, yes, that's a great question. So I have been playing with, and luckily Joe Griffin has been so patient and so understanding with, and like, knowing what I'm saying, even though I think my brain makes complete sense, so my words make no sense. And yeah, he has created something that is beautiful with the instruments that will be on stage, and I think it'll really kind of set this tone where, as we think about supernatural, we think about horror, like, what is that sound that kind of feels like it's silent, but there's still something there. So that's what something I've been trying to experiment with Joe and with the team, the Foley team, and just defining like how to convey that in a clear format.
Cool.
So yeah.
are you both going to be in attendance when it's performed?
Yes.
I can't wait.
Well, I can't wait to hear, like I said, the finished product after the competition is done. The Death Scribe performances will be Monday, December 3rd at Lincoln Hall in Chicago. So if you are around and you're bored on that Monday night, now you have something to do. Nikita, Jerika, thank you so much for your time today, and good luck.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And thank you. We'll be back with more Death Scribe coverage right after this. Hey, we've got more Death Scribe up right now. We have the writer of the play, Migraine, Skylar Shrimp. And Skylar, you have to talk about where Migraine came from, because I don't want to give too many spoilers away, but Migraine is what everybody realizes is a affliction that many people have, but then it becomes, shall we say, manifest?
Yes. Yeah. So I want to give due credit here, which is that I got the idea for Migraine at last year's Death Scribe. And I was sitting watching Cavities, which ended up winning that night. And I thought I knew where the story was going. I was like, oh my gosh, I know where this is going. And then it took a left turn and went a different place. And I was like, okay, cool. So that's my idea, and I'm going to take it, which was I got interested in an idea of a disease that lives inside you that has feelings and doesn't want to leave, even though you want it to leave. So I was sitting there with cavities, and I don't want to spoil cavities for anyone, but I thought that the cavity would be like angry to go to the dentist, which it ends up being a totally different kind of story. But it kind of like grew out of an experience of watching another play and being like, oh, what if there was a disease that needed to stay inside you, that wanted to stay inside you, whatever the cost. So that's kind of where the idea came from. And then as I started writing it, it became a lot more about these kind of mundane horrors of just being a woman in the world and is kind of like, you know, dealing with microaggressions at the same time you're dealing with massive migraines and what that could potentially turn you into.
Well, it's a fun read. I can't wait to listen to the performances of them after they've done. But the fact that you got inspired to write this by watching a previous Death Scribe, that just tickles me so much. How long have you been aware of or a fan of Death Scribe?
For a while. I love horror in all forms. I grew up going to a ghost story festival every summer, like from when I was a teeny tiny kid up until, you know, my early 20s when the festival ceased to exist. And, you know, got interested in horror movies very early on. And it's just something I really love. And so, you know, my first experience with horror was these ghost stories, which is, you know, a very aural experience. And so I had friends that were involved in Wild Claw, so I knew about it. And I actually performed in it one year. So I grew up in Chicago, but I've been back in Chicago professionally for about 10-ish years. And I think I've known about it since, so I've known about it for 10 years. I think this is the 11th year. But I only started going and participating within the last couple years. But yeah, it's a really cool idea. And again, I think what's wonderful about the aural experience with horror is that you create your own nightmares from it. You visualize your own monsters, which I think can sometimes be an even more powerful medium than something like a film where you are kind of handed the monster, somebody else's version of the monster. And, you know, monster, I mean that in sort of metaphorically in all terms. It's not always a literal monster, but the scary thing. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a super cool. I submitted to it before and did not get in, which I don't think the play was very good that I submitted before, so I'm fine with that. But yeah.
So when you enjoy horror yourself, do you prefer stage plays, the radio dramas, short films? What's your first go-to for when you want some horror entertainment?
I mean, definitely my first go-to is probably going to be movies, just because they're much more accessible than most other things. As horrible as it may seem, we don't have a tradition here of, you know, meeting for dinner and then the night moves forward and people start telling ghost stories. That's like my dream social life, but it's sort of hard to force that to happen. So I do go to film quite a bit. That said, you know, I just finished directing an Edgar Allan Poe play, so I was kind of like sitting in the driver's seat of kind of cultivating and creating moments of horror and darkness for people. So, you know, I'm kind of interested in any iteration of it. Again, like films are just super accessible because they're at your fingertips now with, you know, things like, you know, the internet. But yeah, I mean, I have definitely curated a couple evenings of ghost stories and like contacted local storytellers, and that's kind of like my dream. Like if that were a weekly thing, if that were the kind of thing that, you know, I could could every week know I could come to a place and like share ghost stories. That would be my ideal thing. I've dabbled in a couple, like listening to a couple podcasts, and I haven't totally found the right fit for me. I often find that a lot of like the ghost podcasts tend to be stories about things that I just don't believe actually happened, where it's like, I know you want this to have happened to you, but I don't believe it. It's just too perfect. So I'm still like looking for something super creepy like that. I did, while I was working on Poe, listen to a lot of audio recordings of Poe's stories, which was amazing. Vincent Price recorded like all the Poe stories. So you can get them on YouTube and just listen to Vincent Price read stories to you. But I do think that like horror theater is a fairly underexplored thing these days. And I see, you know, Wildclaw's been doing it for a while, and I'm seeing more and more other companies choose horror plays and, you know, work on scaring an audience versus, you know, making them feel something emotional, which is really, really cool. And I hope that more places start, you know, exploring that genre. I think horror has kind of a pulpiness to it that keeps a lot of people away because it's, you know, not art in their minds, which I couldn't disagree with more. But I do think that we're seeing more and more people choose to use this medium to tell fairly serious stories. I don't know if you watch the Haunting of Hill House on Netflix, which I have a lot to say about, but you know, just the fact that they were like, we're going to tell a family drama story and use horror, I think is sort of indicative of something a lot of people are starting to do more of, which I think is a really powerful way to tell any human story.
Cool. Well, we are looking forward to the Death Scribe performances Monday, December 3rd at Lincoln Hall. So everyone, mark your calendars for that. Skylar, good luck in your quest for the Bloody Axe.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to just be there. I don't need an award. I'm really excited just to show up and see it happen is definitely enough for me. So I won't be disappointed if it goes to someone else. But thank you for your wishes.
Cool. And like I said, we'll give everybody updates when the performances have happened. And we will continue our Death Scribe coverage right after this. Hi, welcome back to more of Death Scribe coverage here on Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me now is Spencer Davis, who is directing the short piece called Migraine. Hi, Spencer.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
No problem. This is probably one of my favorite things to do all year. The Death Scribe competition is just so delightfully unique. I just smile just thinking about it. So what's your previous experience with Death Scribe, if any?
Yeah, you know, I gotta admit, I've never actually been, which is kind of embarrassing because so many of my friends either run the company or have been previous participants. But yeah, for whatever reason, it always fell on a date that I just couldn't make it. So my first Death Scribe is going to be the first one that I'm a part of.
Nice, nice. So the piece you're directing is called Migraine. Tell us a little bit about it, especially what attracted you to it.
Sure, absolutely. Migraine essentially centers around a young woman who finds herself suffering a migraine, as she often does, and discovers that a large source of it is from the men in her life, her condescending boss, the doctor who pries a little bit too much, the boyfriend who turns to her and is consistently asking for sex or is self-absorbed. And essentially what happens is, without giving the midpoint twist away, though, is that her migraine begins talking to her, and she begins talking to her migraine. And it becomes this Thelma and Louise meets Fight Club of taking down the patriarchy. The reason I picked it is because it's hilarious. For me, horror and comedy are cousins. The idea that they both rely so much on rhythm. You know, it is, with horror, it is silent, silent scare, just like in comedy, it is set up, da-dunch, you know. And so for me, it just felt like a really interesting way to, while it is not the scariest of the bunch, it does use horror in a really interesting way, and particularly horror radio dramas. Some of the Foley opportunities that are in it are really kind of exciting for me in the way that they blend together Foley and music. And so I don't know. I just really like the challenge, and it was the one that out of the batch really just I found myself outright laughing and constantly entertained in a way that it kind of surprised me, honestly.
Yeah, there is, shall we say, a healthy dose of wiseassery, wisecracking going on in this one. And I think that style of comedy appeals to me. And it took me years to realize why. As a child, my patron saint was Bugs Bunny.
Sure, I can see that. The kind of the ornery kind of spirit of fighting against, in that case, a literal man, you know, while also just kind of having fun at their expense. I think there's something really interesting and very biting about the way Skylar has written both Migraine as a piece and also Migraine the character. Migraine kind of becomes this friend who taps into that dark side of you, that mm-hmm. friend who's a bad influence, who says, come on, you know you want to do this thing, and happens to find you at a moment of vulnerability where you go, you know what, yeah, I'm going to give into these baser instincts. I'm going to follow, for the first time in my life, I'm going to follow these gut instincts. Then we kind of see where the main character Sophie goes after she kind of lets Migraine take the reins a little bit.
Yeah, I think, I like to think anyway that most decent people, when they reach that rage tipping point, have, you know, instead of the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other, the avenging angel comes on one shoulder and the devil says, whoa, now rein it in.
Sure. Well, and it's interesting you bring that up, because I think what Skylar is alluding to with the ending that I don't want to give away is, you know, if your intention is good, if your mission is just, can you still screw it up through the way in which you execute that mission? And so I think there's something I'm very interested to hear what the response is to this piece, because I do think there are a lot of folks who wish they could do something like this, and yet when they see the consequences of their actions, is it worth it? Is it worth going down that rabbit hole? And I think that's something that Skylar's really playing with here that also really kind of hooked me and intrigued me.
Cool. So from a director's perspective, what have you been working on in rehearsals? What part of the theme do you want the actors to bring out the most?
Yeah, so I would say that in rehearsals, the thing that I've been kind of focusing on most, it's interesting because it's the thing I'm focusing on most, and yet we don't have it in rehearsals just yet, but it's about prepping the actors, so get the rhythm in their body so that once we integrate this element, they're ready to go. You know, it's the final ingredient as opposed to it coming out of left field and we have to start from scratch. And that's the integration of music. Mm-hmm. I know with radio dramas, they tend to use music as underscoring for a scary moment, or you use it to show the passage of time, or to show a change in location. What I'm really interested in is illustrating the migraine, at least her feeling the pain of the migraine, through the white noise that comes off of an electric guitar or a poorly tuned amp or something along those lines. We start with that, and then what we end up doing is, as the play progresses and as Migraine and Sophie become one, they become a bit of a badass team together, that amp or that guitar suddenly actually becomes the source of the soundtrack for their badass mission. And so it's going to be really interesting to kind of play with this idea that we're kind of giving the audience this audio vocabulary that they then watch the arc of. So I think that's really been the thing that we're kind of working on. It's just the rhythms of that. How quickly do we reach a mile marker in which the guitar or wherever the source of music is that we'll end up using on the night where do we start seeing that transition from being a thing that the source of pain, and then the thing that's actually lighting the fire under her? When do we actually watch that start that change start taking place? It's such a fast play too. I mean, it is a fast flying 10 minutes. We kind of surprised ourselves in rehearsal the other day, realizing that, like, hey, we have time to build in some laughs here that are well deserved, because this thing just honestly flies off the page. And so it's been about finding that rhythm and finding the notes, so that ultimately when we integrate the music, it feels like we're kind of putting on a blazer onto an otherwise tailored suit, and that we're not just kind of starting from scratch and you know, rushing to the finish line.
Excellent. Well, I wish you guys luck in the competition. That Scribe will be Monday, December 3rd at Lincoln Hall. And this one sounds like a lot of fun. I have been promoting the recordings once Wild Claw gets the recording of the finalists up online, and I can't wait to hear this one.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm very interested to see if the audience kind of picks up what we're setting down, because we've been having a lot of fun, and we just hope that it's kind of infectious when we get on stage.
Cool. Well, Spencer, thank you for your time.
Thank you. This was fun.
And we'll be back with more Debt Scribe right after this. Hi, welcome back to more Death Scribe coverage here on Slice of Sci-Fi. Right now we're talking to Tim Griffin and Elizabeth Lovelady. Tim wrote this play, Subject Number 9, and Liz is directing it. And there really is no way to talk about this particular one without giving too much away. So I'm just going to say it's it has a twist on non-human experimentation that just sends chills down your spine at the end. So, Tim, who hurt you?
It's great to talk to you again too, Summer. You know, it's funny. I can give you a little bit of the in speaking in broad strokes. The way this piece came about was there's another author who wrote something similar to this from a different angle with a different character, and it was a 100-word short story. And I thought, well, I'll try that. And this was about 18 years ago or so. And so I wrote this piece and circulated a little bit. And I got a call from my uncle, who said, "Well, Tim, I got the story. It was very creative, and I had to destroy it." and I laughed and I said, "You don't know what a great compliment you've paid me, Pops, because that somebody." In it, that something I wrote affected somebody so deeply they couldn't have it in their house. That was that's a great compliment. And then, this year I was thinking, well, what should I do for Death Scribe this year? And I was playing around with something else, and then I thought about this thing, and I'm like, well, hell, I can make that into it. That's a perfectly good Death Scribe piece. And as it turns out, it turned out pretty well.
It had me confused while I was reading it. But intrigued, because I was trying to figure out, what are these guys doing? Where is this going? And then that moment where you go, oh my God.
there are clues throughout. You know, I drop little hints throughout. And then when all the pieces sort of, it's like, it's like one of those paintings at the mall that you have to stare at until you see the sailboat. All of a sudden the sailboat clicks into place. And it's at a different place in the script for different people, I find.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man, I love that about the sailboat. I had the hardest time seeing those things.
Oh my goodness. So Liz, where, you know, we all know that the Death Scribe directors get to pick which piece they want to produce, to perform on Death Scribe Eve. Without getting into any spoilers, was there something in particular that made you just excited that this is the one?
Well, you know, I mean, of course, the big reveal at the end that we shall not name, that was, of course, a huge part of it, because I just love, you know, walking someone down a road and, you know, it starts getting dark and scary and wooded and you're wondering if you'll ever come out on the other side. And then you do, and you are not in the place that you expected yourself to be. So I think that was a big part of it for me is, you know, you love it. It's really wonderful to be able to be involved with a story that has surprise to it, not just little moments of surprise, but, you know, a huge culminating surprise at the very end.
Yeah, this one, this is one of those ones I cannot even begin to talk about, because you risk ruining the surprise, and it's not fair to deprive other people who may see this perform live, who may listen to it later. You don't want to deprive them of that moment when their jaw hits the ground and bounces a little bit.
I think we are doing a really great job of building the suspense at this moment, though.
How are you directing the actors? What are you guys doing in rehearsals to sort of not give anything away before it's time?
Oh, well, you know, I think that a big part of it is, you know, just increasing the number of questions that the audience is asking, really getting people to say, like, who are these people? What is this poor creature? Who is this master that they refer to that's going to be, you know, bringing some sort of judgment upon them? So I think that, you know, really getting people to start asking those questions and ideally working people up into kind of a froth of, I can't stand it anymore, I have to know what's going on here, is probably my main goal.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear all the five finalists when the Wildclaw team posted on the website finally, because I am deathly curious now about what Ellie is going to prepare for the sound effects for the creature. I want to be there, and unfortunately this year I can't, but oh my goodness, this one.
And we do have, Ellie's going to be doing a lot of heavy lifting on it. And we also have an actor that's going to be playing the role. So I'm really hoping that will, you know, even add to the sense of suspense to it, that you know, helping to grow that sense of what are these people doing to this poor creature, that I think that people will have, or I hope that people will have an even stronger connection to that with an actual human being voicing the role.
Unreal, though.
Yeah, actually, it adds having an actress play the creature, like Lizzie was saying, adds an even deeper sense of pathos and misery to the piece, that once you figure it all out, it just, you know, rips your spleen out.
Oh, goodness. Well, Liz, is this your first Death Scribe?
This is, in fact, my first Death Scribe. I've been in the audience before, but this is my first time directing a piece.
Cool. And Tim, is this your second or third?
This is number three.
Number three. Well, you...
So it's either third time's the charm or always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
This one, I think, will blow a lot of people's minds. I haven't been this intrigued by reading a script since Earwigs 3 years ago. And Earwigs won. So.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah.
Oh, that was a good one.
That one still creeps me out. Still creeps me out.
Yeah, I felt when I saw Earwigs, I thought, okay, I'm all right losing to this one, because I had one in competition that year too. But when I saw Earwigs, I'm like, yep, that's okay. I don't mind losing to this guy.
That's always a nice position to be in.
Oh, sure.
Yep. Well, Tim, Liz, good luck on December 3rd with your performance of Subject Number 9 in Death Scribe 11.
Thanks.
And call us back after the show so we can talk about the rest of it.
I think I might have to. This, like I said, this one captured my imagination. I just right off the bat, just literally, I could feel brain matter behind my left eyeball twitching and melting.
Oh boy! I'm sure everybody said that.
Oh yeah. And I'd be happy to do a follow-up interview on this if you want to, because there's so little we can say.
I'll have to put that down. That's gonna be on the top of my list there. So we'll do that. But again, the Death Scribe 11 will be happening December 3rd, Monday, at the Lincoln Theater in Chicago. If you're in town, go check it out. Good luck, you two, really.
And they have on that, I think, just a little clarification on the venue. I think it's Lincoln Hall.
Lincoln Hall.
Just in case anybody's Googling.
Well, I will get the correct name and address from Wild Claw's website so people can find their way. But, I think this year's is going to be just as much fun as before. Can't wait to hear the results of the winner of the coveted Bloody Axe.
I can't wait to hear the other plays.
Oh my goodness.
They
are fun. They are fun. But thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
And we'll be back with more Death Scribe-a-Palooza right after this. Hey, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi and our never-ending Death Scribe coverage. Death Scribe 11 is coming up December 3rd, the first Monday in December in Chicago. And with me now is the writing team who put together Whisper Trigger, one of the finalists, and the director, Sarah, Dan, and Tara. Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you. Hello. Hi.
So, Whisper Trigger is an interesting story, and I'm going to stand up and give you the slow golf clap for being the first people I know of that have used ASMR as a horror story. So, tell me how that came to be.
Sarah and I were just kind of brainstorming ideas, and something that ASMR is everywhere now. Like, I mean, it's just so common, and a lot of people get a lot of enjoyment and pleasure from it. But also at the same time, there's just this like subtle creepiness about some of it that just makes you uncomfortable if you're not used to it or aware of it. And I remember sitting down with Sarah, and I mentioned ASMR and some of the people who like speak directly to the screen, and how it just kind of disconcerting that can be to just open yourself up to a stranger like that. And Sarah was like, "Oh, that sounds interesting." And then she just went, she took it from there and went on a deep dive of the whole ASMR world.
Well, what's interesting is, so I'm really into guided meditation, mm-hmm. which is a little different from ASMR, you know, and I just find that it's calming for my anxiety. And so when Dan told me about ASMR, I was like, well, I just obviously have to go down the rabbit hole of researching for hours and hours. And it was so creepy to me. And like, and this, I kept thinking, like, you know, you're trying to create this tingly sensation, right, in the body. And it works for a lot of people. But it also kept thinking, like, wait, but this keeps reminding me of like porn, because it's, you know, it creates a different kind of tingly sensation. And so then I was just like wrapped up in it and became so obsessive. But I think what really intrigued me about this as a horror story is the idea of something that is supposed to be soothing, something that is supposed to calm you and make your life easier, actually like destroy you. You know, the thing that you're supposed to trust betrays you. Mm. So I think that's really where we started.
there's also so much like vulnerability to it that I think is fascinating, mm-hmm. that, you know, people are opening themselves up to strangers and trusting them to, I mean, not that, you know, that's been necessarily abused, but, you know, like there, it is like this thing, like how much do you just open a video and close your eyes and let it into your brain without like any filter. And I think that's kind of a fascinating area of that too.
Exactly.
So Tara, what was your impression when you first read this? What was the impetus that said, yeah, this is the one?
I teach an extended vocal technique called unbridled sound. So I get really into the way that human voice impacts people. So with one of the ASMR videos in the horror play, that is essentially what happens. This human voice, or maybe inhuman voice, completely has a hypnotic effect that eventually leads to not great outcome for our main character. So that's what drew me to the piece. Then personally, I follow some ASMR Instagram, not necessarily for the soothing so much as like, it's just, I don't know, it makes me happy. I think ASMR can also do that to someone, but like, there's one that I'm really into that's about soap curls. It's just such a weird thing, but it's like they shave the soap and like let them harden and then they crush them. And it's like the best thing. So this idea that somebody has taken something that I'm like, oh my God, I fucking love these soap curls. was something I was really intrigued by. And then finally, the idea of like, that all of these plays are supposed to be turned into something for people to listen to, right? Like, the event on the 3rd is going to be rocking and so fun, but ultimately what's going to live on is this thing that we listen to, and what we're essentially saying is, be careful what you listen to. So that, to me, is a way of sort of engaging with the horror element in a more meta way. Not unlike The Ring, right? So when we watched The Ring,
yep,
we were aware that, like, what is the meta interpretation of this? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because when I'm reading this, I was like, oh no, because I tried ASMR and all I got was that tingly feeling in the back of my neck that you get from fingernail scratching down a board.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people talked about that, or a lot of the cast have talked about that feeling. They're like, it's like that. I'm like, I guess, but it feels good to me. So, like, and that sound doesn't feel good to me.
It's so specific to, like, what I think what's fascinating about it is because it's a very internet-first medium where it's just so ultra-specific. Like, one person's just fingernails down the chalkboard is another person's, like, music. Like, it's so targeted. It's like you're just talking about the soap, like, soap curls. Like, that's so ultra-specific. And, like, there are like there's videos where like, you know, it's a simulation of like someone like combing your hair or someone talking to you as if you're a dog. And like, it's like all so, and like one person might hear one of these things and be like, that's so weird. It makes me so uncomfortable. But another person, it'll just click into place. Like, it's crazy.
Cool. So Tara, is this your first experience with Death Scribe?
This is my first Death Scribe experience. As a director and participant, a few friends of mine have written pieces for Death Scribe. So I was a fan before I became a participant.
Well, I wish all of you luck in the upcoming battle for the Bloody Axe. And that is something I'm looking forward to hearing, the recordings of the performances. I want to hear how they've done some of the little voice tricks that are implied in the script that I read. So good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we shall return with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
This is Stephen Kilpatrick, host of Tales to Terrify, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
And that'll do it for the Death Scribe pre-contest, pre-competition finalist interviews. All five stories are wonderful and creative and ranging from humorously uncomfortable to downright mind-blowing. Again, for those of you in the Chicago area, it's not too late to get tickets, but I would hurry because they're close to selling out. You can get all of the information you need from their website, wildclawtheater.com. That's theater spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E. Get all the details from tickets, where to buy tickets, how much the tickets cost, and directions to Lincoln Hall for the performance, 8 p.m. local time in Chicago, Monday, December 3rd. If you have any questions or comments about horror for the holidays or anything else for that matter, please feel free to call in. The number is 602-635-6976, or you can send an email to summer@sliceofscifi.com. Just to remind everyone, there is still a contest running. It was open until midnight November 30th, so that's midnight Eastern time. You have till Friday night to submit your entry for the various stuff I'm giving away right now. You enter that contest by going to the sliceofscifi.com website, find the contact page, and fill that out. Select the have a different question for the subject, and somewhere in the message body, type in the secret phrase, Mimsy Were the Borogoves, which everyone should recognize as the title of a famous story inspired by the Jabberwocky poem from Alice in Wonderland. I will not send the troops to collect your geek card if you don't know that, but I will have to I would just lament the lack of teaching in the science fiction and fantasy classics. I mean, really, kids these days. After you've selected that and put in that phrase, after you've put in that phrase, actually, you should see a secret, a hidden field pop up where you can select one, two, or all of the prizes as something you'd like to be thrown into the hat with. And depending on how many people select each prize, it'll be just a random drawing, or just whoever might be the only person to have selected a particular prize. I can't believe nobody wants Beyond the Sky. That is such an interesting movie. Could have been a little bit better, but it's still fun nonetheless. If this particular contest goes well, I will probably do this again for future contests, picking not-so-hard-to-spell secret phrases. How about that? You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, on TuneIn, and I just found out we're on Player FM. I had no idea. Or maybe I thought somebody had told me it was there before. I just didn't dig deep enough. Just happened to pop up when I was doing a little search, trying to make sure I had all my links right. And there's a Player FM link for Slice of Sci-Fi. So there you go. You can leave a review for the show on iTunes and on Stitcher. Let people know you're enjoying listening to the show, and maybe other people should subscribe and find out for themselves. More subscriptions, more downloads does help us here. So thank you in advance for that. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can follow us on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And of course, there is the website, sliceofscifi.com. I've also been having fun tweeting from the Babylon Podcast Twitter account, because Babylon 5 is on Comet TV, and oh my goodness, I hadn't even realized how much I missed this show. The awesome thing about this show, every day, 7 days a week, Comet does a block of sci-fi. They do Andromeda at 7, Stargate SG-1 at 8, Babylon 5 at 9 p.m. Those three episodes will air in the evening and then re-air the next morning at 10 a.m., 11 a.m., and 12 noon. So I get to watch Babylon 5 at 9 p.m. and then again at noon the next day. And this is 7 days a week, not Monday through Friday, 7 days a week. I can watch Babylon 5 twice a day, every day. And a little bit of joy has come back into my life because of that. So if you have the time, check it out. You can also go to their website, Comet TV's website, and watch whatever is on broadcast on their streaming. So if you're bored at work, I think maybe you can just tune in to watch, you know, whatever happens to be on. They have some really obscure horror and sci-fi films during the day, and of course, Babylon 5. So, double thumbs up from here. I want to thank everyone who's supporting the show and the websites. Your pledges through Patreon really do help keep the bits flowing around here. If you want to join in, add your support, you can go to patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Every month, I pick a winner from the different tiers to get various perks. Right now, the $5 tier, randomly selected person will get to choose from either a mass market paperback book that has been covered on Writers After Dark, or an advanced reader's copy of a book from, again, Writers After Dark. It can be horror, it can be sci-fi, it can be YA. There's a wide selection of goodies that need new homes, and I am happy to send them on to our supporters as a thank you gift for continuing to support everything we've done here for so long. Again, that link is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. I'd also like to send out a thank you to my favorite geek rock band, Sci-Fried, for providing the theme music here. If you want to find out more of their geek rock interludes and compositions, go to their website, sci-fried.com. But that'll do it for this episode. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.